The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'd like to welcome back to the program today Julie Clam. She's got a new book out. It's called The Almost Legendary Morris Sisters, A True Story of Family Fiction. And Julie is one of my favorite writers. She's also one of my favorite people on the planet. Welcome back to the program, Julie.
Thank you. And likewise, from the very beginning of my writing world, always the highlight of every publication has been our chat.
Oh, well, hopefully this will be up to your normal standards.
I have no doubt.
Well, I've been waiting for this book because the last time I had you on the show, you mentioned this project, this is sort of like some of your stuff, but it's also sort of not. Tell us how you got the idea for this.
Well, I had heard these family stories when I was growing up, and my father's cousin, Claire, who I was very close to, was always saying somebody should write a book about them. And this was before I was, you know, even conscious of people wrote books. I thought they just appeared. And then when I did my first book, Please Excuse My Daughter, I was sort of thinking I was going to write this book next. But there were just a lot of things that were in the way. I had a very small child, and this book did require a lot of, traveling, and it was also before the internet got to be quite so good for genealogy. There was, at this point, everything is digitized, so you can find so many things that were not available then. And I think probably I just wasn't really ready, so I ended up writing You Had Me at Wolf, and then just putting this in a drawer. And then after the last book, I was like, I need to kind of get back to myself, not write about other things and other people, because it's not really where I don't think I actually, do that well with that. So I started to do this, and I had a lot of notes already from before, and I just, it was like, as soon as I started to do it, it just exploded. Like, I found amazing things that I could never have dreamed of finding, which I wouldn't have. And I just became fascinated in their story and the stories of families who don't actually have, the truth. They have a story, a truth, someone's truth, but not, the truth. And my book is not the truth. My book is in another story of them. So that was, the idea was like brewing for probably as long as anything ever for me.
So who were the Morris sisters?
The Morris sisters were my grandmother's cousins. The stories that I had heard about them were that they were these millionaire, they had been orphaned, left in an orphanage, and one of them made enough money to get them out of the orphanage, and they came to New York and made millions, and one of the sisters had an affair with J.P. Morgan, and the other one was, had this Broadway play stolen, all sorts of, fantastic stories. And the truth was they were extraordinary people, but the stories that we were told about them were not the extraordinary stories. They were not actually the true stories. They were, they really did amass a fortune without any men in their lives, and, which was kind of an extraordinary thing to happen. They lived life on their own terms and took care of each other. They were really fascinating women, and they were all born in the end of the 1890s, early 1900s. So they were doing this at a time where it was really difficult for women to be doing this.
Mm.
And, you know, I was always just really taken with it and wondering how they possibly did it. And, you know, some of the information I found, some I didn't, because, you know, in the pre-internet days, a lot of things that people did were not recorded anywhere. So it was a really, really interesting journey.
And there were five children. They had a brother named Samuel, who isn't that well known, but you looked into his past as well. And then there's the four sisters, three of whom were born in Romania.
Right.
And then the youngest one was born in St. Louis.
That's right.
And the sisters were Selma, is it Malvina?
Malvina.
Marcella,
Selma,
and Ruth.
Right.
And it was Marcella that was the financial wizard.
Right.
And they were so mysterious. You dug and dug and dug, and you found all these stories about them that weren't, you couldn't prove that Marcella had a meeting with Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Right.
The J. Pierpont Morgan thing turned out to be
not
false.
But
the stuff that you did find out was pretty amazing. And the thing that amazes me about them is these women, three of them, lived so long, and yet they had the most horrendous health habits.
Yeah.
How did they live so long? It's amazing.
This is the thing that I'm sort of like, it's like I'm quietly convinced. I do believe, I mean, I am a person who eats organic vegetables and exercises and does everything right, but I think that genetics have so much to do with it. I mean, these women were smoking, all chain smoking, eating, you know, hamburgers and french fries, and, you know, they were certainly not exercising or anything like that. And I think that they had, like, great genes. Some of the people in my family have those genes that, where they live forever, and the other ones have them where they die really early. So hopefully I have those. Because then I can start smoking.
Okay. Well Marcella, she's the one, I think that you really tried to dig into her past, and she was really good at covering her tracks, wasn't she? And by the time she died, she had millions of dollars, and she'd been very generous to institutions like Brandeis University and her local library.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering, what happened to all that money? Was it used up to take care of their health as they got older?
No, the money, most of the money, was donated. Then a huge portion of it was given to certain family relatives.
Oh.
That not me. I didn't put that in the book because
I see.
It's like a sore spot to a lot of people in the family that some got it, some didn't.
I see.
You know, it was their prerogative. And, certain people were closer to them and others were not.
Okay.
So they got a lot of money and,
Well, I was doing the math in my head, and I thought, okay, the Berkowitzes got the cash, and the Clams didn't, and the Zuckermans might have got some too, huh?
No, the Zuckermans didn't.
No, they were on the wrong side of the family, that's right.
Right.
Okay, it was the Berkowitzes that got. Okay. Wow.
Speaking
of Clams, as you know, I had your brother Matthew on the show for his novel a while back, and I'm happy to see that there's more than one humorist in the Clam family. He's a pretty funny guy too.
He is very, very funny, and he is actually doing an event with me on Friday night, a virtual event, so everyone can come. But yeah, he's very funny and a very different type of writer than I am.
Uh-huh.
So it works out. There's not really like the competition that if we were both writing novels, or maybe there wouldn't be, but there definitely isn't, or not in my opinion.
Well, you put out books a little faster than your brother does.
I think and everybody puts out a little faster than my brother, but that is true. He is He takes his time, but hopefully his next book will be out sooner than the difference between his first and his second books, which was 17 years.
I thought that was a really neat novel. I enjoyed it, and it was fun talking to him.
Yeah,
and we got
to
talk about you, so that was even more enjoyable. You got to do a lot of research for this, Julie, including a trip to Romania. And you went to Romania with the gentleman who is now your husband, but at the time he was your boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you really thought it was cool and you loved it. And it sounds like he wasn't quite as impressed.
Well, yeah. I mean, it turned out one part of it was that he was like kind of sick the whole time we were there.
Oh.
And so I think that kind of tamped his enthusiasm. But it also was like, you know, Romania felt to me, I felt like my family and my grandparents, I felt like everyone was there. You know, I mean, I felt like I was walking in their steps.
Mm.
So, you know, obviously that would have an enormous effect on me. It was not, you know, we travel a lot and love to travel. It was not our normal kind of trip. First of all, like, Romania in December is, you know, snowy and cold. And, you know, we were used to going to places, you know, where it was sort of beachy and fun and warm and walking around great cities. And Romania is a little bit of a mixed bag because, you know, they have their whole like early history, which was the, you know, horrible pogroms and, you know, anti-Semitism. And then like, the very next thing after World War II was that they had communism come in and sort of wreck everything nice that was, you know, in before that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a very sort of, you know, definitely a place that would be, I guess, an acquired taste for mm-hmm. certain people. I just loved it, and, you know, I hope to go back. I hope if things ever calm down again in
mm-hmm.
travel comes back, I will definitely be going back there.
Well, I went to Lithuania 17 years ago during the period right when they were kind of making the transition from communism
mm-hmm.
and having family coming from there.
Right.
I felt the same way you did. I felt like I was seeing things maybe that my ancestors saw, and I was walking in their footsteps. So tell our listeners why you went to Romania and what you did when you were there.
I mean, part of the thing when I started this book was I knew that there was going to be a lot of research that was, you know, that I was going to be finding, like, online. And I was thinking when you're thinking about how do I write something interesting, you know, putting a name into Google and reading through the results doesn't exactly make for a fascinating book.
Mm.
And I thought, you know, I have to have these experiences to write about. And so that was like the original idea of going to places, was that I just thought it would make telling the story more interesting. But I had no idea, like, what I was doing or what I was going for, how it was going to work, or if it was going to work. I was, like, you know, sort of mixed about going to Romania. I mean, it was one thing to go to St. Louis, which, you know, is a reasonable trip. But then, you know, my now husband then said, you have to go. We have to do this. Mm. You have to do this. And so, because I tend to, like, have this, I don't know what you call it, some quality where I, like, almost always just almost miss a big story because I'm too lazy. Like, in my third book, Love at First Spark, there was this thing where everybody was going on this rescue of a dog with a jar on its head.
I remember.
And I was like, oh, should I go?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, then it was my ex-husband, and he was like, yeah, you should go. You're writing about this. Like, that sounds like an interesting story. So anyway, I've learned in my, whatever, 15 years of doing books to go for go do whatever sounds uncomfortable or whatever, just do it, and, you know, and fruits will appear, and they did.
Mm. If you're just joining us, my guest is Julie Clam. Her new book is The Almost Legendary Morris Sisters, A True Story of Family Fiction. Just out today as we are recording this interview. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, making radio with the community and for the community. Julie joins us on the phone in New York City. And Julie, you just mentioned you went to St. Louis. And St. Louis is a place where the family landed. And there's a lot of confusion in the legends and in the historical record about what happened there, but it sounds like it was fairly tragic, whatever it was.
Yeah, it was. You know, the original story was that the dad wanted to be, which was true, he wanted to be a movie director in Hollywood, and this was, you know, 1900, so this was, you know, pretty, you know, advanced for that. And he, you know, and they said they landed in New York, and then they were driving out to L.A., and the mother was pregnant, and she gave birth in St. Louis and died. And then the dad put them in a orphanage, and he continued out to California, which is not at all what happened. You know, I started to look into the records of things, and, you know, when you're told something and you're looking for something, you're looking for the things that fit into that, and sometimes it takes, like, almost being hit over the head before you're like, wait, this is wrong, this is not at all, something is going on here. And it turned out that there was a very different story, which, I don't know if it's a spoiler.
Don't spoil it if you don't want to, okay?
Well, okay. I
understand. You want people to read your book, so.
I do.
Yeah. So I'm not going to go there.
Okay.
I'm not going to go to that creepy place.
Okay.
Okay.
But St. Louis is really nice.
What do you mean?
I liked St. Louis. You said I'm not going to go to that creepy place, so I'm just jumping to St. Louis.
Okay. Well,
I'm a big fan.
We do get the sense, and I don't know if you ever were able to verify this, that the Morris sisters, at least three of them, weren't very fond of men.
Right. That was also like part of the very, very intense family lore, the story. Like, I always heard, oh, they hated men, you know, they didn't... you know, they didn't want anything to do with men because their father left them and they hated him. And so, you know, they never want anything to do with men. And all of these stories about things they did to not have men included. And I don't think they really hated men. I think that they counted on each other. Uh-huh. And that was, they were four women. They had a brother, but he kind of went in a completely different direction. They all came to New York, and he went to Texas. So they were counting on each other, and I think they were very tight, and they didn't really want to let anyone else into that circle. One of the sisters did get married for a very brief period of time, a few months, and, you know, and she was the youngest, and she was the one who died first. And, you know, supposedly they said, well, that's because she, you know, got married and that, you know, shortened her life. I mean, she was literally married for like 3 months to a very nice guy. So I don't think it was that. But she died in her like 70s, and they all died in their 90s. So, you know.
And that was Ruth.
They had a point.
That was Ruth, and mm-hmm. She's my favorite.
She's amazing. She was this bohemian, free love, did headstands, and she was very, very interesting and very, you know, like everybody loved her, and she was, you know, loaded in jewelry and exotic perfumes and told all these anecdotes. She was extremely colorful and, you know, and I think probably much more social and everything than the other ones, too.
Yeah. Well, I love the way you have this afterword, and we're reading it, and you say, okay, the end. And then we say, oh, there's more here.
Yeah,
and we find out more about Ruth and this fellow that she was briefly married to. I remember that article in the New York Times.
Oh,
I remember reading that article and going, whoa, this is unbelievable. So
oh,
so
wow.
when you read the book and get to that, you just go, oh, man.
Yeah, it really was incredible. And it was about the man she married, and I was able to find his granddaughter and, you know, get a whole bunch of information that he didn't think I was going to get. So, yeah, it was pretty incredible.
But you're going to have to read the book to find out what we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil it.
It's The Almost Legendary Morris Sisters, a true story of family fiction written by Julie Clam. And their generosity to their local library was very impressive. And this program is sponsored by a number of outstanding library systems here in our region. Mm-hmm. And it just warmed my heart when I heard about their bequest to the library. And then you had some attorney in there who was really kind of a little creep.
Yeah. You know, they had left money for the, you know, and this was like in the late 90s. I think they left $300,000, and they had some things they wanted done, you know, in their name, which is what people do when they donate money. And they had a handicapped stair lift put in for the children to get down to the children's room because one of the sisters was handicapped. And so that was one thing. Another thing was a meeting room that they wanted named after them. When I was looking through these papers at the library, this lawyer wrote, geez, for that $300,000, they want that much attribution, like that was asking too much. And I was personally, like, offended by that because, you know, it was like a little scribble note that he had. But still, I read it and I was annoyed.
Not very gracious.
No.
We really haven't talked much about Malvina. Tell us about her situation.
I'm not exactly sure what happened with her. She was born with some kind of a birth defect that caused her to have difficulty walking. So when the kids were all in the orphanage, Malvina actually got pulled out and put into what was called a cripple's home, which was a orphanage for kids, you know, obviously what it sounds like. And then she was, she was in the hospital to get surgery for her disability, and she was alone in a hospital, you know, without her parents, obviously, or her sisters for 4 months. And then, so she had like a year of not being with her siblings, and she was like 8 years old. It was a heartbreaking story. And everybody, you know, complained about various aspects of the Moore sisters, but everyone agreed that Malvina was the sweetest.
Mm.
And she had really gone through a lot. She worked as a bookkeeper with her sisters when they were younger, and and she did those kind of jobs, throughout her life. And, you know, I guess she was just content with them all.
Uh-huh. And Selma, the oldest of them.
Selma, the oldest. So she was, everybody complained about her being She never stopped talking. She was very annoying. She was very beautiful, and she had a beautiful singing voice. And when she was younger, and there's pictures of her in the book when she was young, she was the one. She did not go into the orphanage because she was above the age of 14. I think she was 16 at the time. And so she always had horrible guilt about not being able to take care of her younger siblings because when their mom was not available, they, you know, there was like it was like clearly the dad tried to keep the kids with him for some period of time, and it was too hard, so he ended up putting two and then the third into the orphanage. And she always felt guilty about that. So,
Well, I bet she could really sell an appliance.
she was her career was washing machine salesman at the end of her life. So yeah.
The book is The Almost Legendary Morris Sisters, a true story of family fiction, written by Julie Clem, who joins us on the telephone. And I'm positive that she's actually at home because we've been hearing some barking in the background, and I'm guessing those are Boston Terriers, at least one. And I know your devotion to Boston Terriers, and I'd like to note that Julie has written a number of years ago the best dog book ever written. It's called You Had Me at Woof. Find that one. If you can find that book, you will agree with me. What an amazing book. How's it going with the dogs?
There's only one left, and she's doing quite well, very spoiled, but she doesn't want any company at this time. She doesn't want me to get another dog, so she's going to be the princess of the house until there's a different situation.
Uh-huh. What's her name?
This is Wisteria.
Wisteria?
Yeah, she's right next to me now.
And was she an adoption?
She is. She was one of the two puppies that was born, the surprise puppies in the mystery. And You Had Me at Woof. I had that old dog who had two puppies, and this was one of them. So she's now almost 13, a puppy no more, and yeah.
And are you still active with Terrier Rescue?
Yeah. I work with my rescue group like constantly. I still love doing that. I have less fosters these days, but you know, I do other things to make up for it.
Uh-huh. Okay, before we let you go, I just want to hear one more thing. What's the family reaction to the book? Your family?
Thrilled. And the cousins are, you know, everybody's, you know, a few of them read it early and they loved it. The rest of them are going to be getting it, you know, today. So they'll, you know, I'm going to give it to everybody. The ones who helped me with it all loved it and were very happy with it. And the rest, we'll see.
So the Berkowitzes are going to have to buy theirs at a store.
I actually gave the Berkowitzes copies.
Okay. All right.
But the other ones, there's a ton of them.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure they'll let me know.
Yeah. Well, it's so good to talk to you again, Julie. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure talking to you, as always, Vic, my favorite.
Oh. The book is The Almost Legendary Morris Sisters, a true story of family fiction. Julie Clem wrote it, and she's been my guest in the Book Nook today. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.